Live from Washington, D.C., this is Warbird Radio.
Hey y'all, Tuck Carlson here, introducing my new video series, Tuck Carlson's How to Be a Warbird Pilot. I don't care what you fly. Warbird pilots are the coolest, and I can teach you how to be one. Best part is, you don't even need a plane. Hell, you don't even need to know what a warbird is just by my video. Inside, you'll learn all the important stuff, like how to fit a flight suit around a beer belly, and why that beer belly is a safety feature. How to ignore small children at air shows. I ain't got time for that. How to grow your ego and sign unreadable autographs. Plus, you'll learn why freedom's the greatest answer to any question. Hey, Tuck, why do you fly these awesome airplanes? For freedom? Or when your wife finds out how much you've spent? Damn it, Tuck. Why'd you spend $6,000 on avgas? For freedom. So for freedom's sake, buy my video. Before long, people will be thinking you're somebody. You'll be sitting around campfires with real women, signing autographs, and petting pretty little baby bald eagles that you grew in redwood trees that you planted beside your hangar. Be awesome, love freedom, and get your copy of Tuck Carlson's How to Be a Warbird Pilot right now. Hey, y'all, hurry, and I'll toss in a special bonus pack. Tuck Carlson's How to Look Good in Short Shorts Late at Night and in the Pilot Briefing. Trust me, short shorts are the coolest things ever. Call now.
Supporting bees the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Well, good evening, everybody. Matt Jolly here with you for January the 24th. Coming to you live from the nation's capital, where things are finally starting to simmer down just a little bit. We had a busy last few days here in the grand old United States of America, especially here where we live. A lot going on. The inauguration of the 45th president took place, and then a lot of ladies showed up, and it probably wasn't what you're thinking, but you can find that on another station. But nonetheless, we're all back to normal. The airliners are flying across the street at Reagan, and we're just sort of settling into our regular routine around here, and it's quite nice to have all of you with us. The phone number tonight, 478-787-4768, is the line to call. It's a free call from anywhere in the world via Skype. If you're on Skype, it's just Warbird Radio there on Skype. So please call in tonight and join the conversation. My guest tonight is Sean O'Brien from the Vintage Aviation Museum. They have two B-17 projects they're working on and a lot more. Let's bring Sean on. It's been a while since you've been on the phone with us and on live, Sean, but welcome. Welcome back to Warbird Radio Live.
Thank you, Matt. We certainly appreciate it.
Well, it's my pleasure. You are the only guy I know of that's working on a C model B-17 to return it to flight. And I think that's going to get a lot of people really, really excited because there's a lot of other B-17s out there flying, but no C models, the early B-17s, none of these are back up in the air. And that is the plan there at the Vintage Aviation Museum. By the way, it's quick linked into the show story today. If you want to check out their website, you can do that while we're talking about it tonight right there via the quick link. Sean, tell us about this C model project, and then we'll get to the other one that's more widely known.
Well, the C model project kind of came about as a concept because, you know, as you just spoke, there's really not a lot of the early, shark tails left. In fact, there's only one intact example, and that's never going to fly again. And so the idea got kicked around a little bit that, you know, what would it be like to actually have a flying shark tail version of the B-17? And so then the Desert Rat team went ahead and put a little more thought into it and a little bit of research and decided that, you know, that is a doable project. So, heck yeah, why not? Let's do it. We're already doing one B-17. Why not do two?
Well, great idea. So now you've secured the parts and the pieces and off you go, right? At least that's the idea.
Sort of. Right. There's a lot of parts and pieces to be manufactured, and it's a long process. A lot of folks don't realize that with these aircraft, that as large as they are, a lot of rivets. It just takes time.
Yeah, well, that's the name of the game in this business. You know, that's part of the reason I think that we've not had the sort of the cultic popularity, if you will, in what we do that that the car and the motorcycle guys have had. Because you can make a TV show and draw lots of attention on a car or a motorcycle build, but when you go out to do a Warbird, I mean, it's years and years and years to pull this stuff off. So sort of loses the romance, if you will, of quote-unquote reality television. But you guys are out there swinging for the fences with these two projects. Tell everybody at home tonight about the Vintage Aviation Museum, because you've been around a little while now, sort of a new museum, if you will, that is setting up shop out west. Tell us about the Vintage Aviation Museum and what you guys are doing out there, Sean.
Well, the Vintage Aviation Museum came about a few years back when I realized that I was at a point where in order to fulfill, achieve my passion and you know, my goals and everything else that I really wanted to do, I had to basically do my own thing. And so I went ahead and, lined up a lot of ducks and drew a lot of really good people that stood behind me. We went ahead and launched this thing because we're not getting any younger. And we thought, you know, better to try this now. And, you know, if it doesn't work out, great. At least we tried. But if it does work, fantastic. Let's have some fun. And things have fallen into place really well, and we're extremely proud of what we've managed to accomplish in a short period of time, and we're sharing history, preserving history, and we're having some fun along the way.
Now, how does a guy from Oregon wind up starting a museum in the desert? Walk us through this, because that to me is a great story.
Yeah, I'm originally from the Northwest, however, in traveling to the Salt Lake City area a number of times, I've fallen in love with the place. But then also looking at it from a professional side, I look at the area. It's a good dry climate. It's great for the aircraft. But then I also look at it as, you know, a hub for people to come from other parts of the country to come visit us. It makes it a lot easier than being in the far reaches of the Northwest. Plus, it also makes it easier for us to take our traveling roadshow, if you will, when we go out to venture out to different parts of the country with our traveling exhibits. It makes it easier for us to get around and to reach more places and to visit more folks.
All right. Well, it makes a lot of sense then. So Salt Lake City going to be the home of the all-new Vintage Aviation Museum, the home of the C model, the world's only, hopefully soon, to be flying within a few years, as we say. That's soon on this show. B-17 C model. And then that other little airplane that you're working on, better known as the Desert Rat, which has been around a number of years. And this thing, when we first found out about the Desert Rat, everybody got all excited and they thought, my God, how are they doing this? And it is a true story. I mean, literally a B-17 being built out back, and here it is. And you guys have sort of partnered up now with the Desert Rat folks, and you're making it happen.
That's exactly right. Mike Kellner, as most folks know, acquired this aircraft a number of years ago from a defunct scrapyard out in Maine, and it was essentially just thrown out in the woods and left for dead, if you will. And Mike managed to get a hold of the airplane, and he had a vision. Most folks thought he was nuts at the time because, it's a big, pretty big project. And that plane at the time, that didn't look so good. But Mike went ahead and nonetheless packed it up, carted it home, and, quite a few years later, he's made quite a bit of progress. In fact, the fuselage is probably 95 to 99% structurally done, and the work has moved into the wings. And so a lot of progress has been made for what has really happened with the airplane.
Well, look, if you want to dive in deep to the history of the Desert Rat, you can go listen to Chris Henry's old show that's still on the site. It's under the Warbird Rescue Hour. And listen to the Desert Rat story. I think it'll bring everybody up to speed. But it's a great bootstrap story that you hear so often in this business. It's not a millionaire or a bazillionaire that initially saves these airplanes. It's guys just like you and me and all of these folks that listen that dream about uncovering a project like this. But look, let's face it, Sean, these projects are sort of far and wide now. I'm not going to say there isn't some aircraft sitting out there somewhere for somebody to find, but those days are in large part pretty well gone. So if you want to get involved in a grassroots project like this, You got to team up with somebody. I mean, you guys are out there on the West Coast and out there in Utah now, and then there are a few other projects that are doing very similar things in regards to saving old airplanes on shoestring budgets that are all over the place. So we applaud you guys. I think it's great work that you're doing. And what do you need from the listeners tonight?
Well, the obvious would be, of course, cubic dollars. That never hurts, you know.
Right.
Somebody wants to show up and, write us a big fat check or, donate, certain items and things like that we could turn around and, either directly use for the restoration or turn into cash. Great, we're all for that. But in the meantime, we're also looking for, different parts. For example, the pilot and co-pilot seats. Those are items that we definitely need that you just never know. I mean, there might be a B-17 seat mounted to Grandpa's old tractor, that kind of, situation. So if anybody out there knows of anything like that, great, send them our way or at least give us a contact info.
Dead or alive, you'll take it, right?
Yeah, because one way or another, we can try and do something with it.
Well, what is the hardest part that you've come across right now? Because you're sort of new into this professionally as a museum executive director and president. What are you finding challenging about this for the folks that are sitting at home, kind of armchair quarterbacking what you're saying right now and thinking about how they would do it with their museum? What is the reality of this, Sean?
Well, you can't get your funding all from one place. You have to really work diligently and and stick with it and reach out to a lot of different places in order to find your funding. It doesn't come from one source. And so you got to get really creative sometimes as to, how you come up with the available funding and what avenues you explore to be able to make that happen.
It's never as easy as it seems, is it? I mean, that's the sad reality of this is that, we talk about there being a lot of money out there. And there is a lot of money that's available for this stuff, but not everybody's dream is your dream, is it?
That's exactly right. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to be around museums and in the warbird industry for a number of years. So I've had a chance to, see all the different facets that happen within the, vintage aircraft industry and seeing what it takes to, go above and beyond restoring just a, even a small airplane. And so when you go to look at, a four-engine bomber, and then not only just one aircraft, but multiple aircraft, then you really got to, reach out far and wide.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be talking about in the next, at the bottom of the hour, we're going to be talking to two friends, one that runs Warbirds News, Moreno Aguirre, and then we're going to bring in Jay Bass, another businessman. And these guys, they have often said they wanted to do this, and so I told them tonight, I said, look, we're going to do this. We're going to have sort of a Warbirds business symposium, if you will. And this is going to be kind of neat tonight. We're going to start this series tonight. And hopefully some small museums and folks that are out there that listen to the show regularly can walk away with something that they may not have thought of tonight. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, I don't know if you know this or not, Sean, but speaking of long-term kind of grassroots projects, the CAF down there at Moreno and their hangar there, in Jay's hangar, outside of Atlanta, I saw an airworthiness certificate for the Cobra project that they have down there. So I'm hoping that tonight we hear some big news, but we'll wait and see. You never know, right? You never know about those.
They worked long and hard on that project, and they definitely deserve to have that thing back in the air.
I'm telling you, they got to be just chomping at the bit, to get out there and do that. But that day when the C model and when the Desert Rat take flight, that's going to be a momentous occasion out there for you folks. What are you holding on to right now, Sean? Walk us through this. What keeps you going day in and day out in doing this? Because it is tough, and people often say this. Why do you do this? Why are you so focused on this? What is it that keeps you going at the end of the day?
Well, it's my passion for history. A lot of folks, they have, the impression that we're all about the airplanes because we're an aviation museum. Well, the airplanes are only one piece of it. What a lot of folks don't realize, there's a lot of history behind the airplanes, and it goes even deeper than that with not just the airplanes themselves, but you've got the pilots, the ground crews, the folks that actually built them, designed them, everything. And so what I find very fascinating and interesting is all that history behind it and bringing that to the public and educating them about what the past, you know, what happened then, and also trying to tie it to what is occurring now. And one thing that was we've been real fortunate is, like, for example, Dick Cole, Lieutenant Colonel Dick Cole, last living Doolittle Raider, he's a real good friend of our museum. And we had him for two events last year, our Living History series, where we bring a group of folks in to have a chance to meet him and essentially learn history from the man who lived it.
Well, there's no finer individual than Colonel Cole, in my opinion. I mean, he and, well, his whole family, really. I mean, Cindy, I'm sure you've gotten to know, and just the whole family. What a great group of people. And that is so indicative of all of the Raiders who are now sadly, you know, gone away. They've all flown west except for Colonel Cole, who's the last living Doolittle Raider. But what a great guy and a great family. And I think that you touched on something there, that it's not about the aircraft. The airplanes, as we've always said, they're just props. So to speak, to get us into what we really want to talk about, and that is this history that is so valuable and so worth saving. What do you hope the Vintage Aviation Museum can do in regards of building a museum? Let's talk about this, because that's another project in itself, is putting up some type of interpretive center there that tells the stories of these airplanes. What are you working on with that?
We've got a few, designs, together. We pretty much know what we want to build. We're not going to go in and, you know, with high hopes and think that we can just build the Taj Mahal, if you will, at first. And so we're going to have to do it, responsibly and do it through, a number of years and just progressively grow so that we can make sure that, we don't outpace ourselves. And we've got a couple of different locations identified, and so we're just working with some local municipalities to see what the feasibilities are for the different locations that we've looked at to dial in the final location. But hopefully before too long we'll be breaking ground, but we'll know more before too long.
And this will be somewhere out there in Utah near the Salt Lake City area is what you're thinking.
Yes, it will be in the Salt Lake City area. And another thing we really like about that area is you can't hardly throw a rock and not hit an airport. So there's a few out there to choose from. It's just choosing the right one, not for, you know, what our needs are today, but what our needs are down the road.
Right. Well, we're looking forward to seeing that. And good stuff. Sean, how did you become so passionate about this? Where did you fall in love with this stuff the first time?
Well, I've always been a real history nut, especially the World War II era, even when I was a kid in school. And then throughout my adult years, it just, it's like a drug. It just got worse. And so finally I find myself getting more and more immersed in it. And then, you know, once I was able to get involved with museums and different organizations, then I knew that that's something I really, truly enjoyed. And at the end of the day, I took something away from that, and it was something I truly enjoyed.
I like your shirts there. Keep calm and fly warbirds. Tell us about that, because a lot of folks want to get one of these shirts once they see them. I know they're gonna fall in love with the swag of the museum, and of course, all those dollars they help these great projects come to life. So, tell us about that.
Well, when I was getting ready to go ahead and get to meet museum started, a good friend of mine, Jim Mandelblatt, back there on the East Coast, he went ahead and he put this this image up on Facebook. Keep calm and fly warbirds. I looked at that. I'm like, okay. I kind of like that. So I asked Jim, Jim, do you care if I steal that? And he goes, okay, fine, but it's going to cost you a shirt. Sold. And it's actually fit in real well with what we're doing. Shirt's been a hit, and it's worked out real well.
That's terrific. Well, I'm hoping that it all works out really well for you with the museum and with the move that'll be pending and everything else. The folks that are listening right now, especially the young kids, we always get this question, and I like to ask it because I think it's an eye-opener, and I hope you don't mind. But tell us professionally what your background is, because a lot of these young folks that listen, they're not 100% sure they can do this, or they think something's going to hold them back. Talk to us professionally what it takes, Sean, in your opinion, to make something like this happen?
A lot of hard work and determination and an unwillingness to, and basically just be willing to take a chance. A lot of folks have a lot of reservations because of, you know, one thing or another. And, you know, if you're at least willing to take a chance and, you know, take a good leap of faith, it never hurts to try.
You're not an aerospace engineer or a rocket scientist or a guy that prints your money from your oil well in the backyard, though. I mean, you're doing this
exactly, kind
of bootstrap stuff. So I think that that's good for these folks to hear, because so many of these younger people that write us, they say, well, you know, man, I'll never be able to do this. And a lot of folks can. And I think that every winter we talk about this, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere, that this stuff is so within reach that people just don't realize it. If you just show up, And get involved in an organization like the Vintage Aviation Museum that Sean O'Brien, our guest tonight, is a part of and is working so hard to put out there. If you just get involved, I think you're going to be shocked at the opportunities that come forward. What is the time frame, Sean, for getting something in the air right now?
Well, actually, funny you should ask, because we just recently had a Lockheed PV-2 Harpoon donated to us that's a relatively unknown aircraft. It's been sitting quietly parked for a number of years, and we plan to wake it up, and our goal is to have it flying by summer. So that would be our first flyer.
That's terrific. Now, where would we have last seen this airplane, this Harpoon?
Buffalo, Wyoming.
Buffalo, Wyoming. Okay, now you have my interest piqued. So tell me the story, Sean. I mean, that's big news.
Yeah, it was purchased a number of years ago from the estate of an individual that had it for a spraying operation. And so it since sat for quite a while, but once we get it airborne, it will be one of less than half a dozen that are airworthy in the entire world.
All right. So it's still painted up like a spray plane, I'm guessing.
Believe it or not, no. It's actually natural right now.
Okay.
It doesn't have your typical spray markings on it.
Well, I've got all these visions of that famous Ty Ramey video, you know, where Ty flies it off the dirt strip and then brings it back to life in all its glory. I mean, what a great story. And the Harpoon is a favorite among so many folks. So congratulations on that. That's huge news, Sean.
Thanks. We're certainly excited about it because it allows us to, you know, there again, help tell a piece of history, because a lot of folks, you know, don't really know what happened up in the Aleutian Islands, and that's where the Harpoon was typically used in World War II. It was a, you know, patrol bomber used predominantly in the Pacific Theater, especially up in the Aleutians. A lot of folks don't really know the history of that. And so with us being able to take that aircraft around the tour circuit, if you will, and share it with folks, it allows us to share that history and keep that history alive.
No, that's great news. Well, so what do you need as far as volunteer stuff goes? Are you looking for A&Ps? What are you looking for right now?
Basically, all different skill levels and all different interests, because there's always something to do. And as long as, you know, folks have, you know, a passion for what we're doing and a willingness to learn, you know, we can teach somebody.
All right. Well, good stuff. Now, look, since you broke this news and you started telling us about this right here at the end, you got to send us some pictures so we can share it with everybody on our Facebook page and link it over to yours so we can help spread the word about this, okay?
We certainly will, because we're getting ready to do a fundraising campaign pretty soon to help get us where we need to be able to wake this aircraft up.
That's exciting stuff. Sean O'Brien, thanks for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate your time, and we're looking forward to seeing good things come from the Vintage Aviation Museum. Going to be a lot of fun, Sean.
Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
All right, bud. We'll talk to you real soon. Sean O'Brien, everybody, there from the Vintage Aviation Museum. When we come back, we're going to have Moreno Aguirre on the phone, as well as Jay Bess, if everything goes right. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Live from Washington, D.C., This is Warbird Radio.
Hey, y'all, Tuck Carlson here, introducing my new video series, Tuck Carlson's How to Be a Warbird Pilot. I don't care what you fly. Warbird pilots are the coolest, and I can teach you how to be one. Best part is, you don't even need a plane. Hell, you don't even need to know what a warbird is just by my video. Inside, you'll learn all the important stuff, like how to fit a flight suit around a beer belly, and why that beer belly is a safety feature. How to ignore small children at air shows. Ain't got time for that. How to grow your ego and sign unreadable autographs. Plus, you'll learn why freedom's the greatest answer to any question. Hey, Tuck, why do you fly these awesome airplanes? For freedom. Or when your wife finds out how much you've spent? Damn it, Tuck. Why'd you spend $6,000 on Avgas? For freedom. So for freedom's sake, buy my video. Before long, people be thinking you're somebody. You'll be sitting around campfires with real women, signing autographs, and petting pretty little baby bald eagles that you grew in redwood trees that you planted beside your hangar. Be awesome, love freedom, and get your copy of Tuck Carlson's How to Be a Warbird Pilot right now. Hey, y'all, hurry, and I'll toss in a special bonus pack. Tuck Carlson's How to Look Good in Short Shorts Late at Night and in the Pilot Briefing. Trust me, short shorts are the coolest things ever. Call now.
Supporting bees the old-fashioned way. This is Warbird Radio. Tune in. Take off.
Well, my thanks to Sean O'Brien for coming on tonight, and my thanks to each and every one of you for listening. It's a free call from anywhere in the country if you'd like to join in, from anywhere around the world, rather, I should say. Skype is the username there. It's just Warbird Radio. Then you can dial us on the old landline, 478-787-4768. It's also published there on the website. If you want to call in, record something at any point, feel free to do that. We'd love to have you on live, though. If you're listening to a recorded podcast, give us a ring sometime. Let's go to the phone. Mo, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. I wasn't sure if you were there. Is Jay here?
I'm here.
Oh, my goodness. We actually got both of you at the same time. I can't believe it. Jay Bess, Moreno,
we're
and Gary.
We're actually not the same person.
I know, right? I'm so thrilled though that this actually worked out. I wasn't sure it was going to work out, but Jay, I'm glad you're here from the Atlanta side of Warbirds, way down south there in Dixie. Jay Bess, Moreno, and Gary, two guys that know a lot about business and a lot about Warbirds. Mo, you and I were talking about this, and sort of having a quick symposium here. On the business side of Warbirds, we just heard from Sean O'Brien, a young museum there, the Vintage Aviation Museum. They just had a Harpoon donated, and they're getting ready to fly it. And they have two B-17 projects they're working on. Give us what somebody like that could learn, and probably the most important thing they should learn in this first segment tonight. What do you feel is the most important thing to take away from this?
Who wants to go first? Me, Jay?
Yeah, you go, Mo. You go.
First of all, I brought my personal translator here. So tonight.
Yeah, Jay Bess.
So we're translating multiple languages. Sure.
Absolutely. Everybody. I speak Mo.
Yeah, he speaks Moreno. That's great. And let me just back up. Mo, give everybody a little bit about your professional background.
My professional background? Well, I.
Just so they know who they're hearing from. You know what I mean? Because they all know you from Warbirds News, but you're more than just a pretty face, Mo.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Well, I was born in Italy and moved to the U.S. in 1999 to become a pilot. I became a commercial pilot. I did a little crop dusting in South Georgia in Bainbridge for about a year and a half. And then I completely changed line of business and I started working on the internet. And I did that for about 15 years and started two small companies and sold them and then worked for others. So I kind of gained my experience by doing that. And aviation has always been my passion. So I decided to go back into the aviation business professionally about 4 years ago and got a job with an airplane brokering firm. And in the meantime, about 5 years ago, I joined the Dixie Wing. And Jay was already a member of the Dixie Wing. Jay has a business background as well. And we started applying what we learn in the business environment to the Dixie Wing. And So that's really in a very short, condensed way my background. And I think we are doing great. We realize one thing that's very simple. You know, these airplanes will not fly forever, and we need to be ready for that day. So we have developed a series of activities that generate income for the Dixie Wing without turning the prop. I think that's really, at least for the Dixie Wing, was a good big step forward. Traditionally, the CAF has always been a flying museum, and flying was the main source of revenue. But when the airplane goes down, you can't do rides, you can't do air shows. How do you make money? And so Jay and I have been working on a lot of things down at Dixie Wing in the last four years for me, and Jay has been a member for longer.
Now, that's sacrilege to say that someday these airplanes won't fly, Mo. That is absolute sacrilege.
Well, you know,
but it brings up a good point that if you don't have some diversity there in your organization, then hey, look, well, I mean, when the plane stops going for whatever reason, then that's a problem. Jay, what do you feel is the most important thing facing these museums and organizations, and give us a little bit of your own background?
Well, actually, I was lucky enough as a kid. I had a great uncle that his EAA number was like 100 and something. And he and his wife didn't have kids, so they kind of took all the nieces, nephews, and cousins and so on and so forth under their wing. And so I got to go to Oshkosh in the 70s. And of course, that time of 76, 77, you had the world's greatest TV show, Black Sheep Squadron. And so I got to meet Pappy Boyington as a kid, and whether there was any truth behind it or not, according to him, I think it was his fourth wife, but their wedding anniversary was on my birthday. And so I'd celebrate my birthday up to Oshkosh, and Boyington and I would eat birthday cake together. Now, it may just have been a ploy to get birthday cake, and if it was, that's okay. But That started my interest in aviation, and certainly in warbirds and so on and so forth quite a bit as a kid. And, you know, like everything, I discovered cars and girls as a teenager and kind of got away from it all. And but came back to it after some time, and actually got to go to 2 Black Sheep reunions, got to meet a lot of the guys in the squadron, and got to know a couple of them very well before they passed. And so about 10 years ago, I joined the Dixie Wing, and you know, as with any museum or any entity like that, it was going through a lot of changes and certainly morphing from a, you know, an old boys flying club to something else. And, you know, it's not about the planes not flying, but it is about, from a museum standpoint or a business standpoint, is like what you said, it's diversifying. It's finding other avenues to fundraise and to revenue generate to keep the organization going and not rely on either rides or air shows as our sole source of income. And in that way, you can, you know, you as you find other avenues, you know, you're not flying the planes as much, and but the people that want to enjoy them, and that it's on a bucket list kind of item, or, you know, an air show that you'd really like to go to, you know, you can be a little bit more specific. And but I think the biggest thing is, you know, in this day and age, it's keeping things relevant. Our World War II veterans are dying off. Their families are losing touch with what they did and their personal connections to the war. And you know, it's about keeping things relevant for the current generations, and to make sure that as we all get old and crusty, that the people coming up behind us still have a passion for it, and that they're able to pass it down. And that's a lot of the things that Mo and I work on really a daily basis, is to find new and innovative ways to engage the public and to certainly teach the history, but also in a way that's relevant to kids today and even adults today. You know, we're just not that generation that can go to a museum and walk around the velvet ropes and just stare at things. I mean, you've got to engage people. You've got to inspire them. I think Mo can tell you some great stories about his kids and going to different places when they can put their hands on whatever it is they get excited about it. So it's hands-on history.
Mo, I want to get into this. I'm going to ask you both this question. What is the big Achilles heel we don't see right now? Is it that we're doing too much flying? Is that it, or what is it? What do we not see right now?
I think Jay probably hit it. Diversifying. I think as far as the CF is concerned, I think focusing only on the World War II, it's in my opinion, it's not enough. I think honoring aviation, American aviation heritage should be broader. So as from a CF perspective, I think expanding a little bit our, I guess, reach to Vietnam, going up past World War II.
I'm going to play devil's advocate here, because at that point you start wagging the tail is wagging the dog, isn't it? I mean, that's the risk we run. If we have a specific collection, then that's great. But you're saying diversification is what I'm hearing, is we have to diversify as an industry, and it goes beyond just offering rides and barnstorming, basically, right? I mean, that's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like we said earlier, diversifying, I think it's the key here. Think outside the box, do events that, you know, at the end of the day, the airplanes are just a vehicle to deliver the message. So again, you need to come up with different, we're going to do a 10K in April. And we call it keep them flying. Well, what does it have to do a 10K with warbirds? Well, it helps bringing people through the doors. So I think we have I hate to call it a product, because we are all passionate for it. So usually, you don't like to call a warbird a product, but you got to sell it in order to bring the money in. So we have a product that needs to be packaged in a different way. Come out from the old school flying club mentality and just treat these as a business.
I don't know many warbird pilots that run. I don't know many warbird pilots that run, much less a 10K. Was that a hard sell?
Keep in mind, these are pilots. When there's free food and free booze,
they
pilots
run
anywhere.
Okay. All right. I'm just envisioning some of these guys that I know, you know, down there in the Dixie wing trying to run.
But
and,
you know what, Matt, that's a great point. In the fact that what we're attracting is a crowd that would normally never come to our facility. And one of the things that Mo and I really stress is partnerships with other entities, whether it be other museums, schools, aviation entities, museums. We're constantly on the lookout to partner resources and work together. And one of the things that we've developed is a great relationship with the local Convention and Visitors Bureau. Now, in our local area, to be quite honest with you, we really hadn't gotten a whole lot of love. And the CVB kind of had a change in direction, and the new director came in. And the next thing you know, we've gone through some economic studies with the Georgia tourism folks, and we've been identified as one of their biggest assets in the community for tourism. And so as part of that, they've developed two events to raise our profile in the community. One is Hops and Props, which is a craft beer fest and music festival in the fall, and Wine and Warbirds in the spring. And the whole idea is we're getting people to come out to the hangar, take a look at who we are, what we have to offer. They're socializing in a manner that they want to, but we're able to kind of deliver that message without them knowing. And of course, it's a fundraiser. So it's a win-win all the way around. So just like the 10K run, no, trust me, I don't think we'll have any of our members in it. I know I can't run anymore, but we'll have 200 or 300 people there, if not more, that will have never have come down and seen us before. And that's part of that connecting with folks that you just wouldn't get to in kind of the typical museum kind of world. So it's, again, it's all about connecting with folks in ways that they want to be connected with. It's you're familiar with the radio station, you know, WIFM. What's in it for me? and that's what we've got to get. That's what we got to give these people is something that's in it for them. But while at the same time delivering our message and certainly, you know, keeping them flying by raising funds.
We're talking to Jay Bass and Moreno Aguirre, two businessmen that have turned into Warbird lovers and aficionados about some of the business ideas to help these new museums that we all love to keep going forward. And hopefully some of you that are listening tonight can take some of these ideas. If you have an idea you would like to share with Jay or with Moreno, you can always reach out to us on social media or via the phone line tonight, 478-787-4768. Free call from anywhere in the world on Skype tonight, just username Warbird Radio. Mo, there's a lot of stuff afoot right now in Georgia specifically that is really, really exciting. And I know we can't talk a lot about this, but how do you see the youth getting involved in what we do? That because it is, as Jay and you both have pointed out, we're so far removed now, most of these 17 and 18-year-olds, where it was our grandfathers. Today, it's their great-grandfathers. Many of them, they've never met. How do we involve them in something like this? Is it through STEM? Is it through sporting events like the 10K? How do we get them to show up and get interested in this stuff?
To me? For me?
Anybody. But yeah, Mo, let's start with you.
Well, you know, as you know, you and Jay talked this week about the STEM program, and myself, I'm sort of involved because of my daughter. She's 8, and she's getting exposed to STEM at school. So that's definitely and the old country is supporting the STEM program. So I think that would be one of the many ways. I think what has to be done, and I know there are programs out there that do this. So Jay and I are not really reinventing the wheels. We're just applying what we have learned from others in our own context. But I think what has to be done, there is a need to develop programs that will actually track the progress. I mean, you can expose kids to aviation one time, and then what? I mean, how do you follow up? So I think there is a need to follow, to have a program that exposes the person, the kid, to a specific program, and then follows the kid throughout his progress or her progress. I think that's really the key, because there are many great things out there, and the kids go out, they fly one time, and then what? Very often, the kids nowadays are exposed to so many distractions, so many other things going on, so many other things are thrown at them that it takes a lot of work to make sure that they'll follow, I guess, a path, so to speak, or a flight plan. So I think that's really what has to be done. I'm not sure what exactly, with what program exactly. I think STEM probably does a very well, very good job with it, but I think that's what I don't see happening often. You know, you expose the kid to an activity, and then what? Then, you know, they go back to their own routine. So I think that's really the challenge. And the accessibility, because as all know, we grew up in a time where we were able to just go to the airport and go see airplanes. Now you have fences, you don't have access to airplanes as much as they used to. So it's I think it's our time now. We are all in our 40s. Jay is a little older too. Take the torch and carry the torch. So I think having a defined path, it's a trackable path, it's one of the solutions for any program.
Jay, I want to ask you a very serious question now, if it's okay, Mr. Bass. But maybe this is too personal, but how many times, and if you don't want to answer this on air, I understand, but how many times has Moreno come to you with a proposal that included something about an F-104 starfighter? Because I think the whole world knows this man's obsession with this airplane. Yeah, exactly. I mean, so all kidding aside, Mo, I mean, you love this thing. Are you going? Is there a chance to have an F-104 starfighter? I got to say it right. An F-104 starfighter included in this program. Is this part of it?
Yeah, everything. One day I'll have one in my backyard.
That's right. Damn straight, Matt. We're going to have a starfighter. Involved. It's good fun, but at the end of the day, too, it is about getting the next generation involved, because that they're going to be the stewards of this stuff, and if they don't care anything about it, then why are we messing with it, you know? Which brings up a good point. Why aren't we doing more to attract this?
I was thinking that I think there is a difference between a traditional aviation museum and the World Board Organization. So aviation museums have started way earlier than World Board Organizations in creating activities to keep people coming and keep the doors open. So I think it's just us in the warbird community that we have been flying airplanes for years. I mean, they've been flying airplanes. Now we've been flying airplanes for years, and that's what all we know. But I think there is more to that, and the CF, it's heading in that direction with this big project in Dallas. So I think even the warbird community, Sean on the radio earlier, he's a perfect example. They're very innovative in the way they raise money. It's not necessarily always about flying airplanes. And, I just sent Jay like 10 minutes ago a newsletter from the Museum of Flight in Seattle. You should see their calendar for the next 2 months. It's impressive. The programs they put up, it's just, I think, the way to go. The interesting thing, it's not always about aviation. It doesn't have necessarily always to be about aviation. I think anything that brings people to the museum, it's a key. And Museum of Flight, as we know, they've been doing this very well for many years.
There we go. Well, Jay, I'm looking forward to seeing what's coming down the pipe for you guys. Going to be fun. Before we go, because we're almost out of time, the Dixie Wing received an airworthiness certificate for the Cobra project. Can you spill the beans on this? Any time we're going to be soon seeing this thing in the air, hopefully. What about it, guys?
Well, I certainly hope it's going to be a matter of days. The good and bad of it is the project manager for the plane for the last 15 years passed away about 10 days ago. So the unfortunate, he was aware that the airworthiness certificate was given to the plane, but he had a very short illness and passed. And so we're dedicating the first flight to Bob Boothiller. But we had our test pilot ready to go this weekend, and between the weather and I guess a bit of the flu, he had to postpone for a few days. But I have a feeling, Matt, that it's just a matter of days before that thing takes to the skies again. I think the last time it flew was 1974.
Wow.
So,
all right.
It'll be a great day.
Tell us about the test program. Who is the test pilot? What are we trying to accomplish the first flight?
A controlled landing.
Yeah, there you go.
It's a gentleman by the name of Jim Dale. He works for Rod Lewis and very familiar with the aircraft and all facets about it. So we'll want to obviously take it up. He'll check it over. We'll take it up for probably 30, 45 minutes. It'll go through a couple different tests. The idea is, is to get about 3 to 5 hours on it. And then compliments of our local airlines here in Delta, or local airlines here in Atlanta, Delta, is going to help us with some paint work on it. So we've got to get it up there as quick as we can. But so there's going to be a lot going on. There'll probably be a pretty big to do when it comes out of the paint shop. So that'll probably be the day most people will see it.
And do we know what it's going to look like, Mo?
Is this the point where I get off the phone?
Yeah. In the last 30 seconds, Mo, do we know what it's going to look? Because this is a significant airplane, isn't it?
It's gonna look so beautiful, so huge that you never believe it.
Thank you.
You're gonna make warbirds great again.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. I think we touched a nerve, didn't we, Jay?
Next question.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But it's a little bit of history on this airplane. This was indeed
Seriously, with all seriousness, yes. This airplane was flown by NACA in 1945. So it was a test platform for studies on the aileron flutter and they did studies on the aerodynamic foils. And they did a lot of studies. I have about 6-7 reports here on my computer. So it's definitely a significant airplane. My personal desire would be to paint test on the side of the airplane. That's the picture we have from 1945, honoring all the test pilots that flew it. But it's not for me to decide. It's not my it's not my decision. So I hope we'll be able to at least fly it a couple of times to do a photo shoot for the magazines with such stencils or such decals on it, and
then
the
we're going to slap some invasion stripes on it. Yeah, we're going to put some invasion stripes and go to town with it. All right, guys. Well, looking forward to that. It's going to be fun. All right, Mo, go calm down. Forward. Jay, thanks for coming on tonight, guys. Good to hear your voice. I look forward. We're going to do this again, okay? We're going to get some questions.
Absolutely,
in
anytime.
And start drumming this up and looking forward to it. All right, Jay, Bess, and Moreno, and Gary, thanks for coming on the show tonight. Really appreciate it, guys.
See you, Matt.
Thank you, Matt.
All right, guys. Always fun to have Moreno on and to have Jay Bess on. Look, if you haven't checked out Moreno's website, you got to go do that. It's warbirdsnews.com. He has some great stories, including the end of the year story there that just ran. I think today it's on there. But all the top headlines from 2016, sort of all laid out right there. Our next show tonight starts off in about 9 minutes with Zane Adams, the Texas Warbird Report. And standing by right now with a preview of tonight's big show is Zane Adams. Good evening, Zane.
Good evening, Matt. How are you?
Who do you have on tonight? We're talking albatrosses tonight, aren't we?
Yeah, got Stuart Lawrence out of Conroe, Texas, up just north of Houston there. Him and a merry band of fellas or folks down there flying an albatross, a Navy veteran, seaworthy, a flying boat, or amphibious, I guess. It's not necessarily a flying boat, but having a lot of fun with that airplane and doing little air shows and things. So we'll talk to them about their airplane and what they're doing with it and, get the word out. They're looking for some sponsorship for a paint job, speaking of paint jobs, and it's always an important thing with an airplane to have it nicely painted. So and then also talking to Paul Freeman, he wrote a book on the VFA 201, a reserve squadron, F-18 squadron, or at least they retired as an F-18 squadron. He was a squadron member, and he wrote a little history of the squadron, and has going to put all his proceeds to the 22 Kill organization for vets with PTSD and this kind of thing. So it's a worthy cause, and I met him at an air show last year, and we figured I'd have him on for a little bit. So.
Good deal. Going to be a lot of fun. All right. When I was in college up there at Big Sam at Sam Houston State, I used to go down to Conroe and fly down there all the time and rent a little airplane down there and fly, and I got to know some of the legends in that town, like Pete Fusco, the author of another great book. Probably one of aviation's greatest books is the one by Pete Fusco. But I remember there was an albatross there. I wonder if it's the same one that used to, we'd have some fun nights out on the lake sometimes down there, Lake Conroe. And there was always an albatross that would come down there. Occasionally, we'd see it.
So, I don't know. I don't think so. I think this the airplane's only been there since like 2010 or 2012,
there used to be one there that would land in the lake. So
there's a few around, so.
Yeah, that'd be fun, wouldn't it? One of these days.
Oh, yeah.
One of these days. All right, Zane, I'm looking forward to it. We'll have you on here in just a few minutes. And stand by, folks. The Texas Warbird Report is coming up here in just a few more minutes. My thanks to Zane and to Moreno and to Jay Bess for coming on tonight. And, of course, to Sean O'Brien. Be sure to visit the website there for Sean's museum, the Vintage Aviation Museum. Soon call Salt Lake City Home. Check them out. If you have a couple of dollars that you can spare, send it on over to them. I know they'd really, really appreciate it because it is, as Sean said, cubic dollars that help these stories stay alive and keep these aircraft going and certainly in presentable condition. So if you can, help them out. We'll talk to you next week with an all-new show right here at Warbird Radio Live, and be sure and think a veteran if you see one. So long for now, everybody.